VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And friends, thank you for joining us on Crosstalk. Our program today comes in follow-up to a story that we've been following. January 5th, 2022, we introduce you to Scott Shera, the father of Grace Shera. Grace was his 19-year-old daughter with Down syndrome, tested positive for COVID, and was hospitalized and treated following the protocols that are being carried out in hospitals across the nation. Well, shockingly, a DNR, a do not resuscitate order, was placed on his daughter without his permission or consent, as he had health care power of attorney. With hospital protocols in place, Grace was ushered into eternity on October 13th, 2021. The issue of informed consent is very much at stake, and Scott was back with us this past April 3rd, 2023, on Crosstalk addressing the topic of informed consent. Well, about that time, Scott was involved in filing a landmark lawsuit, the very first of its kind, now to be given a trial date. He's back to share the story with us today. And Scott, so good to have you back here on Crosstalk.
Well, thanks for having me, Jim. What a great introduction.
Well, Scott, we've had many new listeners since the last time you were with us. And while we can't go into every detail, we would direct our listeners to go back to Crosstalk and listen to the January 5, 2022 interview. But if you would just give us an overview, what happened to Grace when you took her to the hospital due to her having COVID?
Well, we took her to the hospital on October 6th, and we did because her oxygen saturation dropped to 88%, and we were led to believe that that was an emergency. Grace was really fine. She just had a cold or flu. We don't really know for sure that she even had COVID. But ultimately, they suggested admitting her to the hospital, put her on oxygen and a steroid for 3-4 days, and she'd be home. And if they only did that, Grace would be alive today. But instead, they started her on a sedation med called Presidex on October 9th. They combined Presidex on Grace's last day, October 13th. They combined Presidex with lorazepam and morphine, which is what you do with hospice patients to euthanize them in the last hour of their life. And they did that in a 29-minute window. And that combination is what killed Grace. What's shocking, Jim, is that morning, the doctor had called Cindy and I and made the comment, Grace had such a good day yesterday, let's work on nutrition. And, you know, and we also knew Grace had a good day because Jessica, her sister, was with her. And yet, while we were on the phone, the doctor ordered the sedation med Presidex to the maximum allowable dose. And then, simultaneous with hanging up the phone, he put an illegal do not resuscitate order on Grace. So that combination of meds combined with the do not resuscitate order is why Grace is dead and ultimately why we filed a lawsuit.
So is this the same doctor who had told you that Grace had had a good night and that we're going to be working on these other things today?
Yes, it is.
And so it was after that phone call that the DNR was placed on her? You had no clue this was happening.
That's correct. And to our shock, the Department of Safety and Professional Services came out on December 5th of 22 in an email to an investigative reporter and wrote, Chapter 154 of the Wisconsin statutes does not apply to physicians operating in a hospital, non-emergency room setting, such as the one in question. So they're saying, this is the regulatory agency for doctors in Wisconsin, they are saying that a doctor can put a DNR on anybody they want in a hospital setting unilaterally. And that is a complete shock, and it should shock anybody listening.
Yeah. And again, for the right, you had a health care power of attorney over your daughter, Grace.
That's correct.
And just for the record, you pled with the hospital to treat your daughter, that you never gave authorization for a DNR, that you never signed, you never gave verbal approval for one to be placed on your daughter, correct?
That's correct. And when we the way we learned about the DNR, of course, I know after the fact from looking at the records when the doctor placed it on her, the timing, but how we learned about it is the evening when Jessica called Cindy and I on a FaceTime call at 7:20. We had talked to the doctor about 10:30 that morning. So this is just 9 hours later when Jessica called us panicking And when we screamed through the FaceTime call for the nurses to save our daughter, they refused to even step foot in the room. Instead, they hollered back from outside the room with an armed guard present, "She's DNR." And Cindy, I, and Jess all screamed, "She's not DNR, save our daughter." And they refused. And we watched her die with no medical professional coming in whatsoever to help.
All right. Well, as a result of this, you actually brought a lawsuit called Sheriff versus Ascension Health et al., dealing with the topic of medical killing and informed consent. We understand at stake is the issue of life or death. Should healthcare workers have the right to unilaterally and with limited liability label patients as DNR? So tell us about that suit, and then we'll get to the courthouse last week.
Well, the suit was filed on April 11th. The doctors, nurses, and the hospital had until May 15th to respond. They all did respond by that date. It's important to note that we filed against Ascension Hospital System. They're the second largest nonprofit in the United States. They're the largest Catholic hospital system in the United States. They have $30 billion in cash reserves. They receive $10 billion in government bonus money as incentive payments to follow these type of protocols that killed Grace. During just the first year of COVID, we also filed against five doctors and two nurses and left the door open for John and Jane Doe's as we go through discovery. We filed against the doctors and nurses because they were directly involved with Grace's death. And we want the entire country to be on notice that doctors and nurses will be held to account. They cannot use protocols or "the administration told me to do this" as excuses for following protocols known to kill people. So that's why we filed in that way. Interestingly, Ascension Hospital System, in one of their answers to our complaint, said that they're not even in the healthcare business. We were shocked. You know, the answers seem like foolishness when you read them. But then when you get into the essence of what happened last week, Friday, which was July 14th, there was a hearing in Outagamie County Courthouse.
Standing room only.
Standing room only. It was really neat, Jim, to see all the support. And what that hearing was about was one of the doctor's attorneys wrote up what's called a partial motion to dismiss. And what they were trying to do is dismiss two of the claims. The first claim, we have a declaratory judgment for the illegal DNR, and they wanted to dismiss that claim. Strangely, when you read their motion, and I'm going to quote from the motion because it's important for people to understand the legal shenanigans that go on. The attorney wrote, quote, "The DNR order should be dismissed because A, the issue is not ripe for adjudication, and or B, the issue is moot because Gray Shara, the subject of the order, is deceased." So our claim shouldn't be heard because Grace is dead. Remember, the cause of Grace's death partially is because they put the DNR on
right.
her.
Yeah.
And so now they want to use the excuse that because Grace is dead, we shouldn't have our DNR claim. It's ridiculous when you read it. But
well,
this is what goes on.
As you present, it's beyond ridiculous. It's outrageous, Scott.
I agree. When I see it, I think, it's part of what happens to try to drag things out, exhaust people, because, every time our legal team has to respond, it mm-hmm. costs money, so that you try to bankrupt the person filing. And, there's so many things against people filing. The first is there's statutes of limitations in all states. A lady had written me just yesterday and explained with her husband's death that the statute of limitations is only 1 year. So she would have had to get a legal team, get everything organized, and get everything filed inside of 1 year from her husband's death. Of course, that statute of limitations is already gone. But the bigger issue preventing people from filing is tort reform. So, Jim, you probably remember Stella Liebeck. You might not remember her last name, but the story is this is the 79-year-old lady who spilled coffee on her lap at McDonald's. And the Republicans used that case to implement tort reform throughout the United States. Well, tort reform means limitation on liability when you make a mistake. And what they were doing at that time is they wanted their coffers full of money from the big corporations supporting them. So I own a small business. If I screw up, I have to make it right. I don't have liability protection by state statute. Well, that tort reform trickled down to the doctors' lobbies, and the doctors have liability limitations in all states. And I'm going to explain it in Wisconsin relative to the second piece of the motion, partial motion to dismiss on Friday. So when you look at the, again, I'm going to read from the attorney's motion because it's really important for people to understand what's going on. It says specifically, the legislature's purpose in enacting a statutory scheme, and I'm emphasizing the word scheme, Jim, to govern claims for damages arising out of alleged medical negligence was to encourage healthcare providers to remain in Wisconsin by imposing certain limits on the causes of action that a patient or her family member can pursue and the types and amount of damages that can be recovered. Okay, so what is that saying? It's saying that, so you mentioned earlier, part of our claim is lack of informed consent. That's a huge piece of the claim, because if we would have had informed consent, Grace would be alive today. So it's a cause and effect. Malpractice can't happen if you have informed consent, because you'd be approving it. Well, we had no idea they're giving Grace this med combination. Mm-hmm. The reason they want to meld our informed consent claim into medical malpractice is that's the statutory scheme. There's a $750,000 limit on payouts with medical malpractice versus there's a punitive damage element with the intentional battery of lack of informed consent. So they want to meld that into this medical malpractice claim. Well, just again, think it through. If a doctor is doing his job, he does not have to worry about malpractice. So why do they need this protection? It doesn't make any sense. It's protecting something that is put in place that should have never been put in place, that doctors can follow protocols known to kill somebody and then have a limit of liability. So it, fortunately, the judge did not dismiss based on that argument. So we've got everything moving forward when now the trial date of November 4th of 2024, 3-week jury trial.
Yeah, you just mentioned, and we got several things we're going to break down from this, but you mentioned this drug regimen known to kill someone. And that's something that's very important here, because your daughter was doing well, but is there any occasion in which this 3-drug regimen would be given to someone to prolong their life, to help them, to cause them to recover?
Outstanding question. No, this is part of what I have invested hundreds of hours in. There's a euthanasia agenda in our country that's hidden, and they used words like hasten death, a good death, to disguise what's really happening.
Yeah.
And it is so big that's why I'm out speaking about it.
Friends, we're going to take a quick break here. We're talking with Scott Scherer here today on Crosstalk. And yes, last Friday, a judge has advanced now a case, setting a trial date here in the death of Grace Scherer, Scherer versus Ascension Health et al. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, author and seminar speaker with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, today's a heavy topic. Is there a scientific explanation for suicide bombers?
Chris, our world today is on edge because of a suicidal terrorist. Since evolution claims to be a theory of everything, there must be an evolutionary explanation for even this self-destructive behavior. And sure enough, some evolutionists are now saying that suicidal tendencies are a variation of an evolutionary adaptation that was previously useful in some evolutionary sense. Creationists just stand back and wonder how they can be so misguided, so deceived. The Bible says that man was created initially in a very good state, in the image of God. Yet when Adam rebelled against God's order, creation was permanently distorted, and now we live in a world dominated by sin's ruinous effects. Chris, so you see, what began back in Genesis continues today, even with suicidal bombers.
Thanks, Dr. Morris.
listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Scott Scherer with us today, the father of Grace, who the basis now of this lawsuit, Grace ushered into eternity October 13th of 2021. At issue here really is informed consent. It's very much at stake, not only for the Scherer family, but folks, for you. I mean, this is impacting people across this nation. This is really a landmark case. I understand, Scott, I mean, this the very fact that the judge has advanced this case, even with a trial date, there's not been another situation like this in the entire country. This is the first of its kind, correct?
It is the first. I mean, we are so thankful to have a trial date. You know, when people hear it's in November of 24, of course, they're thinking, well, that's a long, long ways from now. But The legal team has suggested that that's really the fast track because we have to go through discovery, depositions, expert testimony, expert discovery. So there's a lot of pieces that need to be put together so that when we actually have the trial in front of the jury, that they have every T crossed and every I dotted so that we win. And, you know, we have gone on record many times, and I just want to say it publicly here, that our goal in this case is not money. We're spending our own money to fund the case. We're not after any winnings. We want to, you know, to the extent that the judge does have an award for us, we are going to plow it back in for helping other people, because our case is representing 1.2 million American families who lost loved ones during this 39-month supposed COVID era, Jim. This is very important.
1.2 million? That's staggering.
It is staggering, and what makes it more staggering is to recognize we've been programmed to believe the United States has the best medical system on the planet, yet with COVID, we exposed ourselves. With 1.2 million Americans murdered in hospitals, we're number one on the planet out of all 200 countries.
And do you attribute this to the protocols? I mean, you believe that there is a what you call a programmed culture of death, which is the real pandemic. Sure, you're concerned with this, Scott.
Well, it is. That is my concern and what I'm spending full time researching and advocating on right now. And just so people have an understanding, when I say we're number one in the world in COVID deaths in hospitals, number two was India. India has four times the population of the United States, yet their death toll in hospitals was only 531,000. So that should shock anybody listening. So, you know, what you're mentioning about what I'm calling the real pandemic is that we have taken this idea that Ezekiel Emanuel introduced, and he's the architect of Obamacare. And his view of the world is that non-contributing members of society do not deserve medical care. So what does that look like? Well, first, they are hiding what they're doing under the guise of it costs too much to keep non-contributing members of society around. And before COVID, there were 62 million Americans on Medicare and Medicaid. Those two population groups accounted for 39% of the annual federal budget. The United States Medicare and Medicaid policy was relaxed during COVID on purpose to add to the government dole. Now there's 100 million people on Medicare and Medicaid. It increased by 38 million over the 39 months of COVID. So now those two population groups are over 50% of the budget. So we even have more of an incentive, if you believe in this collectivism lie that they've been selling, to do something about this cost. And the something about this cost is the euthanasia agenda. They've been working on this for decades, and they put it into law with Obamacare on March 23rd of 2010. Remember, Ezekiel Emanuel is the architect of Obamacare. And with your permission, Jim, I'd like to share a section out of Obamacare so people understand what the law says.
Is this section 1553?
It is.
Go ahead.
So section 1553, so those of you who are not familiar with Obamacare, it's 906 pages long. I'm reading out of page 141, and the title of this section is prohibition against discrimination on assisted suicide. So it says the government, and now I'm quoting directly, may not subject an individual or institutional healthcare entity. So an individual is a doctor. Institutional healthcare entity would be a hospital, nursing home facility, hospice care facility, to discrimination on the basis that that entity does not provide any healthcare item or service furnished for the purpose of causing or the purpose of assisting in causing the death of any individual, such as by assisted suicide, euthanasia, or mercy killing. So there you have it in black and white. They're telling us that the government, if somebody in the medical profession has a conscience and they don't want to implement the agenda of assisted suicide, euthanasia, or mercy killing, that person cannot be discriminated against. And we already saw how that shook out during COVID. The doctors who stood against the jab, stood against the protocols, were fired, shunned, kicked out of their profession, lost their licenses. And what's interesting, if you go to subsection, I was reading on subsection A, subsection D of section 1553 says that if they are discriminated against, their appeal rights are to the Health and Human Services Department. Well, the Health and Human Services Secretary is likely the most corrupt person in the whole bureaucracy. We look at Anthony Fauci as corrupt, but this man is the one solely responsible. He was given the authority by Congress to implement the public health emergency and kept it running. He had to re-up it every 90 days. So from January 31st of 2020 through May 11th of 2023, he kept it running, kept re-upping it for a complete psyop that we now call COVID.
You know, Scott, it's rather amazing because I remember so many programs that we did at that time when Obamacare was being debated. And yes, Nancy Pelosi, we need to pass it so we find out what's in it. But the warnings that were coming from so many groups warning about the death panels and the decisions that would be made as to what would not be covered or really hastening people's death as a result of Obamacare. And the backlash was so large. Oh, no, we're going to pull this out. We're not going to have death panels. That's, you know, misunderstanding of what this is all about. But aren't you really talking, in essence, the equivalent of a death panel by what you've shared with us here?
I think it's even worse. And I want to share one other thing, because now you see this in writing, and so then that's a wake-up call. But still, how do you convince people to do it? You know, it doesn't make any sense that you could convince a doctor to do this. You know, so just because it's in writing doesn't mean they're going to do it. Well, they've convinced them, because I mentioned earlier the spirit of collectivism. So this is sewn into the medical training that we have this utilitarian concept that we don't have enough care to go around, so we have to decide who gets care, who doesn't get care. So they've all bought into this. And, you know, of course, Grace had Down syndrome, so that's where I've invested most of my time. And in the world of Down syndrome, 67% of Down syndrome babies are murdered before they're born in the United States. So how does that happen? Well, they have created this thought process in the spirit of collectivism that when a young couple goes in to the doctor and he congratulates them on being pregnant, he immediately sets up their amniocentesis. And they unwittingly just follow the white coat because we're programmed to trust the doctor. And then when the amniocentesis comes back and says, well, we suspect your son has Down syndrome, I think you should abort him. And you know, so then they just follow along. And I'm going to spell that out with a lot of detail here in a second with this next document I want to share. Mm-hmm. I think I sent that to you also, Jim, the Down syndrome palliative care for patients with Down syndrome from the Palliative Care Network of Wisconsin.
Yes.
All right. So you think, well, okay, the doctor's recommending the abortion. What's the reason? Well, they have trained these doctors that Down syndrome people are nothing but problems. So they convince the family to abort the little bugger before he's even born. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Grace was the best thing that God ever gave us outside of salvation. I mean, she was fantastic. But what they do, they've got Down syndrome into this population group that needs to be eliminated. So this document is called Palliative Care for Patients with Down Syndrome. It's written by two MDs. It's a training document So you wonder, how do you get doctors into this mindset to kill people? This document was written as a result of Obamacare. It was published July of 2011, the year after Obamacare was passed. And what they do, they start out listing all kinds of problems that people with Down syndrome have, congenital cardiac septal defects, thyroid dysfunction, blah, 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 about 50 of them. So what's the reason? Well, they want the doctors to look like they're coming in on a white horse and helping this family out. So they write right in the document, the lifelong toll on families is high. Part of a robust plan of care includes acknowledgement of this toll by healthcare workers. That's the white horse syndrome. We got to save these people from this Down syndrome mm-hmm. person. They're just nothing but problems. Mm-hmm. Then they write the killing statement. Whenever possible, decision makers, this is the doctors, for people with Down syndrome should be encouraged to use substituted judgment to make key palliative care decisions. All efforts should be made to determine the preference of the patient. However, because of lifelong cognitive impairment, the views of the person with Down syndrome may not be known. All right, so now substitute Down syndrome for dementia, for whatever thing where the person doesn't have all their faculties. Now the doctor gets to make the decision? Are you kidding?
You know, it's really amazing. And Scott, my wife and I, we also have a special needs child, son, adult son now. But had been told early in his life, you know, just basically commit him and get on with your life. And that's the mentality that is out there. I remember also here back just but a few years ago, Iceland was being hailed. I'm looking at some 2017 reports right now, news reports, countries eliminating Down syndrome. But the method that they're using to eliminate Down syndrome is through the killing of them before they're born, through abortion. CBS News found that there are common threads across Europe when it comes to women terminating pregnancies because of positive prenatal tests. Denmark, 98%. United Kingdom, 90%. France, 77%. And say, yeah, we can eliminate Down syndrome, but Scott, they're killing them in the womb before they're born.
You know, the Down syndrome population is the closest we're going to get to God on earth. And Grace, she just showed God's love the way that we're supposed to. You know, I can't do that in my sleep, Jim. She mm-hmm. just did it all the time.
Yeah.
She just, and that's, I think, why they want to eliminate that population group, because they want us away from God as far as they can possibly take us.
Scott Sherr with us here today on Crosstalk. I understand Grace's story is coming out in film.
We're part of a real neat film called Breaking the Oath that was released on May 21st. We released it in a local theater in De Pere. The producer, Jeff Wagner, knocked it out of the park. It's excellent. You can find it directly on ouramazinggrace.net. We have it a prominent banner right on the homepage. You can click on and see it for free on Rumble. And it's an hour and 40-minute film. It, of course, features Grace's story, but then Nurse Erin, who was the first one to expose these hospital murders in New York City, she's in the film. And Vera Sherrab, the Holocaust survivor, is in the film also. I hear the music again, Jim.
Okay, we'll take a quick break. Ouramazinggrace.net is the website. Folks, we're also going to provide you a website which has a tribute for his daughter, Grace, as well. So stay with us. More information coming up. By the way, if you'd like to get on the phone line with us, ask Scott a question, our number, 800-733-9829. We'll be right back.
For thousands of years, mankind has been fascinated with the question of what will happen in the future. Many have turned to palm readers, horoscopes, or a myriad of psychics for answers. However, one of the places people have refused to look is at the pages of Scripture. Jesus himself was asked by his disciples, "Tell us, when shall these things be, and what shall be the sign of thy coming and of the end of the world?" Jesus responded in the Olivet Discourse recorded in Matthew chapters 24 and 25. Bible prophecy teacher and pastor Richard Schmidt addresses and explains these powerful prophetic chapters in his book, Tribulation to Triumph, the Olivet Discourse. VCY America is making available this book for a donation of $15 or more. For your copy of Tribulation to Triumph, call 1-800-729-9829.
Scott Scherer with us here today, and they have just been granted a trial date from the Outagamie County Court System. It's called Scherer versus Ascension Health et al., scheduled for November of 2024, right during election week is when it begins, a three-week trial. And at stake here, really, folks, is this whole issue of informed consent. Does a hospital have the right to go ahead and place a DNR on somebody without the consent of the individual or of their medical power of attorney in through all of this? There's much at stake here, not only for the Scherer family, but for people across this nation as well. It's the first of its kind lawsuit that has now been granted a date. Our phone number to Crosstalk today, 800-733-9829, 800-733-9829. Maybe you've got a comment or question here as it pertains to informed consent, to DNR, the issues going on with the Scherer family right now, the lawsuit that's been filed. Scott, we were talking just before that break here, the film regarding your daughter, Grace. They can go to ouramazinggrace.net and find a link there to see the film, correct?
Yes, they can. And I want to mention one other thing with the film because it's really important. You know, Grace's story has gotten national attention, and we're so thankful for that. You know, we thought that she would save lives, and she has been saving. I mean, the people writing to us, Jim, it's fantastic. But the one person who's in the film, Cindy and I directly removed him physically out of a hospital in Green Bay on November 5th of 22. His name is Robert Pazer, and he's in the film. He survived. We got together with him over 4th of July, you know, and he called me over Christmas and said, "Scott, I'm alive because Grace died." Mm. And he's a disabled man. And just a fan. He's become a friend. He helped me do some research, and he's in the film toward the end to give people some hope.
Now, you also have a special site set up as a tribute to your daughter, Grace.
We do. It's Grace Scherer, SCHARA.com. And Jessica's maintaining that site. We're using it. There's a tribute to Grace on the site that you mentioned. We're asking everyone who visits to put in their name and email address because we're creating a database for future calls to action. There's a lot going on. A lot of it I can't mention because it's confidential at this point, but we're going to be having calls to action for help with. You know, when we have other hearings, we've got to have people there at the hearings. We're likely going to be using Grace's case to fundraise for other cases. So we really want people to go to that website and put in your name and email address.
GraceScherer.com, and that's spelled S-C-H-A-R-A. Let's go to some phone calls here. Let's begin with Lori from Reedsburg, Wisconsin. You're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. I just want to tell you my heart breaks for your family with what you went through, but my husband had a heart attack in December last year, and he was transferred down to St. Mary's Hospital in Madison, so that's a Catholic hospital. The hospitalist, before I got there, he put a DNR on him, and I did not know that, and then the hospitalist, my friend went with me who was a nurse. My husband was in the bed. He has some dementia going on, so he's, you know, not really. But anyways, so the hospitalist takes me out in the hall to talk to me and says that he put the DNR on him, and I'm, like, shocked. And he's like, I'm like, how, you know, I was stunned because I had no idea what was going on. And he says, well, reading your husband's results from his heart attack and stuff, there's, you know, there's really no hope for him if a blood clot gets sent out and stuff. And so we should, I think the best thing would be to do a DNR because otherwise we will be in the same procedures we are now. We'll have to, we may break a rib trying to resuscitate him and blah, blah, blah. And he says, does that sound okay to you? And I'm like, and he said, I said, well, I think we should talk to him. And he says, well, listening to him in there now, he doesn't even know what's going on. And I said, I need your, you know, your approval for this. And I'm like, no, we need to ask him. And I could hear him talking to my friend, and I could tell he knew what the heck was going on. So we went back in there, and the hospitalist says to my husband, so if something happens where your heart stops, do you want us to let you go, or do you want us to resuscitate you? And my husband looks at him, and he says, well, gee, I don't think I'm ready to die yet. And so then they had to put the order in, and the nurse, when she saw that pop up on her screen, she turned to me with the scissors in her hand, and she was so apologetic, she was just stumbling over herself, trying to cut that thing off and apologizing that she would never have done that if she'd known. But it's like, who gives him the right to just slap that on him?
Yeah.
You know, had I not gotten there when I did, and something would have happened to him during the night, they would have never saved him.
Scott, your response.
Well, that's right on. I praise God you were there, Lori. Are you saying that they put a bracelet on him, a DNR bracelet?
Yes, they did.
Yeah. I mean, that is what they're supposed to do. So, I mean, at least you had that clue. In Grace's case, the doctor did it and never put the DNR bracelet on. And,
yeah.
You know, I think I know why, because Jessica was in the room. So Jessica would have seen that instantly. You know, she was in touch with Cindy and I right away. I mean, she would have just said, Dad, did you just approve a DNR? Because Grace has a bracelet on.
Yeah.
You know, so
yes. I didn't even know what that was. I thought it was just one of their admission band. You know, I had no clue because he got there before we did, you know.
Yeah. So the doctor issued it, and then after putting it on him, then asked for your consent, and you said, no, talk to your husband, and he said, no, I want to live.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's so obvious. You know, so, Lori, your case shows how obvious it should be, but the doctors, they work for a system that doesn't value life.
And that's right.
Until people lose their faith in conventional medicine, they're never going to open their minds that hospitals cause harm. And that's why we're sounding the alarm.
Lori, thank you for the call. And
you're welcome.
By all means, reach out to Scott through his website there if you can.
I will. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go to Owen next in New York. Owen, you're on the air.
Yes, this is Owen. Thanks again for the opportunity. I just want to make a quick comment here because, you know, the topic really has some affectionately touched me somehow, and it's related to my son. He's now about 25 years old. He's married with two kids. He's doing productive within society. Mm-hmm. But the point I want to make is that, you know, when me and my wife, she got pregnant, and we went to the doctor, you know, after they went and see that visit, they said, okay, come back, and then they did that test, what you said that they do. The next visit, the doctor just said, hey, ma'am, you're going to have to abort your child because your child has Down syndrome. That make no sense. Now, the only rationale why that process wasn't completely was that only because, you know, it was like a miracle opportunity to have a child. She didn't even know that she was going to have the opportunity, and especially she had a girl, and she, you know, having a boy was like, you know, closing moment for her. So she said, whatever it is. And just to make the point quick, my son came out healthy, happy, no problem, never have a problem. If you see this kid now, sometimes it's haunting just to think about the fact about what the doctor had said at that moment in time. That's the point I just want to make.
Yeah, thank you for making that point. And Scott, number one, we love children with Down syndrome. And here it was, a false positive where they're saying, hey, your child has Down syndrome. You must, need to abort this child. And the child was born without Down syndrome.
Well, this is a big deal, what Owen just brought up, and I'm glad he called, because this idea that now they say, oh, we screwed up, it's a mistake. Medical malpractice was the third leading cause of death before COVID, behind heart disease at 700,000 a year, second cancer at 600,000 a year, medical malpractice at 400,000 a year. What I have learned is I don't think any of these cases, or maybe very few, are malpractice at all. It's part of this collectivism agenda. They label it as malpractice because then it has this incidence of negligence, like, well, this is just a screw up. We're sorry. Well, I don't see it that way anymore. I think that this idea of mislabeling an amniocentesis as Down syndrome, you know, there is a population reduction agenda. And by doing what happened with Owen's son, it just shows it. And I don't look at it as malpractice anymore. I see it as this idea of hastening death, euthanasia. I mean, it's a whole systemic problem that has been created and the doctors are implementing it in order to reduce our population. And the jab, of course, is that whole idea on steroids.
Yeah.
You know, look at what's going on. I mean, we're not going to go on to that today here,
right,
Jim, but
right.
I mean, you get the idea.
Yeah, we got packed phone lines here. Greg in Bloomington, Illinois, you're on the air.
And thank you for taking my call. Scott, we're very sorry for your loss, and I just want to know that we will continue to pray for you and your situation. And I did have a question. You had stated something about the number of deaths in American hospitals from COVID was more than any other country in the world, including India. I totally believe you, but can you tell me where you found that information?
I can. It's on World Data. I don't have that right at my fingertips. It's worlddata.com, I believe it is. If you send an email or you sign up and put that request in via grayshare.com, I can email you back with the exact link. I just can't find
it. Okay, very good. I'll do that then. And we'll continue to pray. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Thank you for the call here. Let's go next to a caller from Illinois. You're on the air. Caller, go ahead.
Thanks to you for taking my call. I was just going to say I grieve your loss, Scott, and it's the same way with mental health issues. The doctor has total control of putting you in the hospital. It sets you up for a whole life of so-called therapy and everything, and he's right about the United States, that it's big business too. You know, you can't tell me it's not. And I'm just praying for your family that you will find a peace there. And I thank you, Mr. Jim, for having me on. Thank you.
Thank you for the call.
Thank you.
We've got, Mel is calling from Calumet, Michigan. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for your program, but I was very concerned. In November 2019, I had to have my upper teeth pulled out. But the doctor, the dentist, had left some broken teeth inside my jaw, so now I have to go through an oral surgeon. And I'm pretty nervous. I'm pretty scared. But, yes, thank you for your program. Love it, and I'll take your answer after the air.
Okay. Scott, you're not telling people don't go and get medical care at all. What would you say to her?
Well, I'm not telling people to not get medical care, but what I'm saying is that until you recognize that allopathic medicine is not designed by God. It was designed by men, and it was designed to take us away from what it used to be. How did doctors used to approach their role? Before the 1900s, they were setting broken bones and bandaging open wounds. That was their job. Now we have gone on the slippery slope, and part of it is our own fault. We want a pill to cure everything, and they're glad to provide it. And it's important to recognize that if your belief changes, you'll be protected.
We have a quick break upon us here, friends. We'll take the break and come back to more of your phone calls here on Crosstalk. Scott Scherer is our guest here today, and the website, ouramazinggrace.net. We'll be right back.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Since February of 2018, I've been warning about the return of the draft. Barack Obama, on his way out the door as president, set up a commission to study drafting America's daughters and mandatory community service. Now, the media mouthpieces seem to be hinting of a coming military draft. ABC News, just this spring, had a headline, "Is it time to start talking about bringing back the military draft in the United States?" And retired Admiral Mike Mullen, former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, said it's time for families to talk about the draft around the dinner table. Now Biden is calling up reserves. People who thought they were out of the military are being called back in. It's time American families decide now if you're going to send your treasure, your children and grandchildren, to die in foreign wars with no national interest.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. I had a caller earlier just ask about where do you get those death statistics. And worldometers.info, worldometers.info, and even /coronavirus, you'll find the information there. But they have the deaths, and you can view by country. So go to worldometers.info/coronavirus. And they have the listing of cases and then the listing of deaths. And just looking as of the statistics there right now, total deaths in the United States have, according to their data, is 1,169,029. The next country is India at 531,915, followed by, well, it's not all in order there, but that's the two main numbers right there. And Scott, as you pointed out, that's less than half the deaths. Though India's population exceeds that of the U.S., its population is some 1.4 billion people compared to U.S. at 334 million people.
Yeah, I know. It's a shock when you see that. These are the type of things when I've been doing research, Jim. You have to, you know, some of this is such a wake-up call. You got to let it trickle through your brain for a few days, but then you start coming to grips with everything we've been told is a lie. This whole medical industrial complex is so deep into money as their god that they will do anything, including kill us.
We've got Diana holding the longest, Tucson, Arizona. You're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to say encourage parents, don't accept what the doctors say. When my son is now 47, but when I was pregnant with him, they ran all kinds of tests on me and everything. And then in the end said they recommended I have an abortion because he could have possible defects. But I chose not to listen to him. My mother said, put him in the Lord's hands and the Lord will deliver him. And he did. My son is alive, well. And 47 years old, I praise God that I did not listen to the doctors. So I just want to say, put your children in God's hands. And I want to say children with Down syndrome are so precious. They're so loving, and we need to protect them. So God bless you all, and thank you for your program and for everything you're doing.
Thank you. And I don't want to paint with a broad brush, because I'm thankful to Scott for many doctors who are there looking for the patient's best interest, too. There are many who are caring, loving, and not necessarily in agreement with protocols.
The 3 days after Grace died, I went to a different hospital, and they turned me around in 24 hours.
Yeah.
So you're right on. I'm not throwing them all under the bus. It just, we've got to sound the alarm. Mm-hmm. There is an agenda that they are being threatened to follow, and if they've chosen that path, your life is not in their best interest.
Clint is next in Winfred, South Dakota. You're on the air, Clint.
Yes, hello. I just wanted to reiterate a couple of things. You need to have an advocate, people in place for these type of situations.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important to have that in place so you have somebody to fight on your behalf.
And let me, we'll have you go on, but in this case, Grace had advocates. So her dad was there right by her side in the hospital when he had to leave. His other daughter, Jess, was there at the hospital and advocating on behalf of Grace. So it is a great point, because we don't know, you know, other things that may have happened, but they did have an advocate there. Go ahead, Clint, with your second point.
Correct. And the second point, I have a friend that's older. They became pregnant. And the first thing they wanted to do when they went to their appointment is to test for a Down syndrome baby.
Hmm.
And they refused that. And they not only did that once, but they had to do it twice. They are proud. I get emotional. But they are now proud parents of a happy, healthy boy.
Hmm.
So
praise the Lord.
Amen. And God bless everything you're doing.
Well, thank you. It's quite a fallacy to think that because you're old, you got to go through this testing. I mean, thankfully, they didn't have that around with Abraham and Sarah.
Yeah, indeed. Thank you, Clint. Richard in Albuquerque, New Mexico, you're on the air.
Yes, I was calling to tell you, in 2014, my mother, I was her caretaker, and she was 83 years old, and she started bleeding from the colon. I took her to the emergency room. The doctors there said she'll die in 3 days. I said, well, can't you operate on her? No, she's too old. She'll die on the table. I said, can't you give her a shot to make the blood coagulate? No, there's nothing we can do. She'll die in 3 days. At that moment, the thought came into my mind, if you have an ailment anywhere in the body, get olive oil, anoint that part of the body, and pray. I came home, got olive oil, went back to the hospital, put some on my mother's lips, and stayed by her side praying all night long. The doctors came in the morning and said, we don't know what happened, but the bleeding stopped.
Yeah.
I said, I anointed my mother with olive oil, and God healed her. And they looked at me like I was a crazy man.
Yeah. You're the crazy one. Thank you for sharing that. Let me also just squeeze in Merle in Tennessee. You're on the air.
Jim, my daughter-in-law's mother 2 days ago was found unresponsive. She's been in a coma. The doctors put her on life support. They said there was no brain activity. Tonight, they were going to take her off life support. We just got a phone call while you all are on the air that she has woken up.
Hmm.
They were going to take her off life support tonight, and they said there was no brain activity. She woke up while you all were on the air, and we give the Lord the glory.
Amen.
But I just wanted to pass that along. I thought it was amazing how your show was talking about that when we just got this call.
Well, thank you, Merle, for your call. Scott, we're down to a minute. What, you know, whether you want to respond to these calls or what would you like to leave with our listeners in close?
Well, because Merle just opened up the door, I feel the need to share something, because one of the things I researched, Jim, was that this idea of people being brain dead, that's another fallacy. There's some nefarious things going on with organ harvesting, and that is part of the reason they want to get a national database together. And you, as far as trusting me on that, that's all you can do right now, but I can provide the research, and you and I will keep in touch.
Great. And again, if people want to reach out to you directly, they can do that, do so through the website, correct?
Yes, they can.
That's ouramazinggrace.net, ouramazinggrace.net. And for a tribute to Grace, the website graceshara.com, S-C-H-A-R-A, graceshara.com. And Scott, thank you for being with us today. And we do ask our listeners be praying for you and your family as you proceed forth on the legal basis here.
I appreciate that, Jim. We're on the front lines, and your prayers are really important.
Amen. Scott Scherer, our guest here today on Crosstalk. And friend, just keep in mind, if ever you come in late to a program, you want to share the program with others, send a link. It'll be up posted in a couple hours, crosstalkamerica.com. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.